In an era when people are reduced to partisan bickering and squabble over the smallest of matters and never achieve any agreement on anything, we are here to provide a new light in a dark world of journalism. We are the Bipartisan with Riley Lauterbach and Hannah Albor.
Welcome back to the Bipartisan Podcast, your independent source for news, fun, and reform. We have an exciting show today because it's our holiday special. Be sure to check out our past episodes on Anchor and Stitcher, as well as almost all other podcast platforms. If you're listening on Anchor, send us a message or a voicemail and maybe we'll air it in our next show. You can check us out at our website for schedule updates and more at sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com, or you can find us on Twitter at bipartisanpodcu1. And if you can, shoot us a donation on Patreon for some cool perks at patreon.com/bipartisanpodcast. And if you're interested in sponsoring us, be sure to call or email today. We really would appreciate it. And finally, a programming note, we will not be putting out a new show until the week after the new year. So catch up on some old shows if you miss us in the next week. I'm Hannah Albor.
I'm Riley Lauterbach.
And let's get into our top five stories. So first we have the spending bill that is going through our branches of the House of Representatives right now. The House passed a stopgap government funding measure Thursday night and a 217-185 vote that includes $5.7 billion for Donald Trump's wall at the Mexican border, as well as additional security, which raises the odds that a shutdown will begin tomorrow at midnight because it is not expected to pass the Senate. Riley, what do you think about us going into a government shutdown so close to the holidays?
I don't know. Government shutdowns have never really done much in the past. Like, I feel like in a month from now, the consequences aren't really going to be seen. But on to the further discussion of the wall. Despite my Republican alignment, I've never been in huge support of the wall. It feels kind of unnecessary. I do think that border control is a major issue that has been neglected for a while that I think needs to have some sort of change, but I don't think the wall is the way to go. I personally think the wall is a waste of money. It's not really going to fix that much. And in a later story we're going to be talking about, I think that's a better resolution to some of the border problems that have been happening.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think that funding for the wall is worth going into a government shutdown over. As we talked about last week on last week's podcast, how Donald Trump, in his meeting with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, said he would take responsibility for the government shutdown. Like, he was like, yeah, like, that's on me. If we're going to shut it down, we're going to shut it down over the border wall, and that's fine. So I think this is going to play pretty badly for Donald Trump if he sends the government into a shutdown so close to when the senators and the congresspeople want to go home to their families for the holidays, and so close to having, at this point, a lame duck Congress and installing the new Congress January 3rd, I believe. So I think that if he doesn't pass a spending bill right now, he's not going to pass one for a long time, because the new Congress is definitely not going to put any funding for the wall in a bill that they're going to pass in the House, much less in the Senate.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that this is going to leave a bad taste in voters' mouth for the 2020 election. Which is a shame, because as a Republican that doesn't fully support Trump and would have rather had many different Republicans in office, I feel like he's going to leave a bad name with something like this for when we get to 2020 in the next election.
Yeah, I agree. This is going to be the second shutdown, I believe, under President Trump, which is saying a lot because it's only been 3 years. It'll be 3 years in January, actually. So having 2 in 3 years isn't a good sign that he knows how to run the government.
Alright, so our next story is a more World War III conspiracy-based. Russia right now is in development of further different weapons, and these weapons the United States are unfit to deal with right now. These are far too dangerous for the United States to deal with, and it is estimated that these will enter Russia's arsenal in 2022. So what do you think about this, Hannah?
I think that the past three shows we've talked about World War III, and we just keep getting further and further to somebody actually launching a missile or invading a country that won't put up with it. This is definitely a scary idea, a hypersonic missile that can be, that is ship-based means that they could move it wherever they want. They could send it down to Central America, like we've talked about in the past. They could send it to South America. There are so many places further, like closer to the United States than Russia, that they could send it and still have a very solid attack.
Yeah, I also think that with this, it shows that the peace we've had from post-Cold War is coming to an end. I think that tensions are boiling in both the United States and Russia again, and I think this peace we've had for a while is finally at this breaking point, and I think that this shows another action that Russia's taking to show that they don't want this peace anymore.
Yeah, I don't think this peace is going to last much longer without us taking action against Russia. I mean, there's been a lot of missile and other weapons development in the news lately, and it's all about Russia or China or North Korea and nothing about the United States. So at this point, I think we're kind of outmatched and outnumbered with all of the technology that's going on over there.
Yeah, I agree, but I think the allies the United States would have is going to compensate for that.
I see that. I can see that. Okay, so next we're going to talk about something that's being discussed right now is that Mexico is going to agree to keep the caravan migrants for now. So usually in the past, the people who are seeking asylum at the United States border have been allowed to be released into the United States and wait for their immigration trial. But however, Donald Trump is trying to push for them to stay in Mexico for longer before they're allowed to enter the United States to seek asylum. Riley, what do you think about this change of policy?
I think this is far better than a wall. Like, a wall is a tremendous waste of money, but this does help fix the root of the problem, right? People always joke about people just climbing over the wall or getting around the wall, and there are plenty of ways to get around the wall. But something like this is going to drastically reduce the amount of migration we're going to have within this country. And as much as I wish the United States could take in as many migrants as possible, the biggest problem is that right now the United States is not in the best place it's ever been, and we can't hope to fix ourselves if we're working to fix others' problems. And I think this is a good solution to what has been happening with the immigration problem.
Yeah, I think this is a good solution for the United States, but definitely not one for Mexico. Because if we're incapable of hosting these immigrants, Mexico is even less able to. Their economy and their government and their social standing is not anywhere near the level that the United States is. And I think that this is definitely going to hurt Mexico, and in turn, Mexico won't be able to help the United States in the way that we want them to. I think that we shouldn't be passing our burdens on, like, down to Mexico. And I don't think that's something that we should be doing as a nation who wants to be a leader in the world. I don't think we should say, here, you keep them for a while. They're not your citizens either. They're from Central America, but you can hold on to them while we try to figure this out. I don't think that's what we should be doing.
Well, I do think that I'm glad that Trump and Obrador have such a good relationship, because they may not agree on everything, but they are willing to look into different compromises. And I don't know if you heard, but recently the United States has considered investing within Mexico to create more businesses to limit immigration. And I think this is good, because it's clear that Obrador is on board with this, and both of them are kind of coinciding on this. They're both talking about this. It seems like a more peaceful, granted grudgingly, but a peaceful resolution to this for both leaders, that where there's not as much tension and either side is forcing one thing on the other.
Yeah, I can see that. I think it's good that we're trying to work together, but I think that part of that has to be us taking on some of the burden as well. So I hope that we can help Mexico build up its infrastructure and what it needs to be a good leader in the world as well as we are, and we can have, like, a good North American alliance. But I think that sending our asylum seekers back to Mexico isn't going to further that. So I hope that we can come to some agreement, but I don't think this is the right step.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I do appreciate how talks of United States investing within Mexican business in order to build up the country so people can get jobs there is a good start. I think that this helps limit the problems the United States has. And granted, it will cause a little bit more strain on Mexico, but with the money we're going to start putting into Mexico, I think it'll end up canceling out within a couple of years.
Okay, so let's move on to our next story.
Our next story is that the Secretary of Defense has resigned. And even though a lot of people are assuming that Donald Trump had asked him to step down, from what everybody is saying, including Secretary Jim Mattis, it is one of choice and one of peaceful relations. According to Mattis, both him and Trump, while they disagreed on a lot, they are in good favor with one another, and Mattis believes that Trump should have a Secretary of Defense that is willing to work with him and not going to disagree to the level Mattis did. So what do you think about this, Hannah?
I think that this was a really, really bad move for the appearance of the administration. Today, when we're recording this, is Thursday the 20th of December, and tomorrow's the 21st, which means that everybody's going to be leaving for Christmas, and nobody's going to watch the news on a Friday night before Christmas. And I think if he had waited one more day, this would have totally blown over. But he has given the press enough time to cover it before everyone leaves to celebrate the holiday, and I think this is going to look really bad for the administration, because as you said, they have disagreed on so much, and Mattis is resigning over his and Trump's clash about the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria after 2 years of disagreeing about America's role in the world and in the Middle East. And I really think that Mattis deciding to pull out now is not a good move for the administration as a whole. Maybe it is for him personally and for his relationship with Donald Trump, but this is definitely signaling to the rest of the United States and to the rest of the world that Trump cannot get onto a good term with any of his help in the administration.
What I'm going to say about that is, while they disagree, it sounds like this is a personal choice for Mattis. It doesn't seem like the past where a lot of different scandals and dirt came out on Donald Trump, where it seemed like he was pushing them to quit or he did something to make them quit. This seems like more of Mattis looking at this as a benefit for the country, that maybe someone that's more willing to work with Trump will result in less clashes in office. And unless something comes out, I think this is more of a Mattis decision than a Trump decision. And I do think it was not smart to do it now. I think he probably could have done it at a better time. But he is staying till February, he said. So I do think that this is that since Mattis is leaving in good favor, while I'm disappointed that Mattis is leaving because it means Trump's not going to have as much pushback, and I think that right now what the Republican Party needs is healthy debates among itself and different people pushing back on Trump's different style of Republicanism. But I do think that Mattis leaving in good favor is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think that an important hallmark of being a president is having people who disagree with you, like, are surrounding you, so you can have that back and forth, decide what's the best for the country, and not only have your idea. I mean, this is true for, like, Republican or Democrat. Like, having people who disagree with you and having people who can challenge you on certain topics is important for, like, a healthy system of government. But also, in Mattis's resignation letter, there was no sign of praise for Donald Trump or praise for the administration, which is usually a part of any resignation letter of any high-level official like this, is praising or saying how you benefited in the job or how you helped the country. There was no sense of that in his letter. And so while I agree that this was his choice, I think there was definitely a lot that played into it.
I do like how in his resignation letter, he also says that what he wants to do is make this a smooth transition. And I'm glad he's not just dropping out now, though. Like, I think it's a good thing that he's willing to stick it out a little bit longer to ensure that this transition is smooth and best for our country.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a hallmark of any resignation, is that being able to bring in someone new and train them and show them how you're running this and how you're helping and how they can do better than you were. And I think that's a really great sign for him that he's willing to stick around for a little bit.
All right, on to our next story.
Okay, well, on a more festive note, we have some holiday news. Friday's winter solstice 2018 features a full moon and a meteor shower. So this is coming out the night we recorded, December 20th. And so tomorrow, December 21st, is winter solstice. And there's going to be a full moon and a meteor shower. And it's going to be so pretty and such a great way to kick off the week before Christmas. I'm really excited about this. Riley, are you excited about this?
I mean, I'm not, like, upset it's happening, but I'm not, like, overly excited. To me, this is just a... For the people that enjoy this, this is a good thing. I don't think there's anything bad with this story. It's just not my kind of thing. But for the people that enjoy this, this is a great way for them to get in the festive mood, for them to kick off with the season. But again, it's just not something I'm into doing. I don't feel that these events are that consequential. But this is something that's not going to negatively affect the world in any way. So it's just overall a good story.
Yeah, so winter solstice will begin Friday the 21st at 5:23 p.m. Eastern Time, which is when the day is 24 hours and 30 seconds long because Earth is nearing its closest point to the sun in its orbit. And so winter solstice 2018 will include the December full moon, both Friday and Saturday night, as well as a meteor shower. It's called the Ursid Meteor Shower. I don't know what that means. I'm not a very astronomical person, but they're going to be meteors falling from the sky on winter solstice, as well as Mercury and Jupiter in conjunction. It says that they're going to appear as if they're about to collide in space despite being hundreds of millions of miles apart.
Yeah, again, I'm not into festive stuff like that, and I'm grumpy about a lot of things, but if you like this stuff, if you're festive, go out, see this. This is something that happens once a year, and this is an especially special solstice.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun if you like looking up at the stars. And if you live in like a rural area, please be sure you go out and look at it, because I live in a city, so I don't get to see this that often because all of the pollution and whatever. But it's going to be so much fun. It's going to be such a great way to start off Christmas break. Okay, so and with that, we will head into our first commercial break and see you on the other side.
And now onto our breaking news segment, where we talk about totally real and serious issues going on in our world. Our first issue is that in Germany, a chocolate factory spill covered the road in chocolate and caused massive harm to citizens of Germany on the road. Hannah, what do you think of this development in Germany?
This is great. I really want to see more chocolate-covered roads in my city and around town. I'm really surprised that nobody went and tried to eat it. Like, this was all very contained, like, the firefighters were there, like, they cleaned it out. But, like, I'm really surprised that nobody went and tried to lick the chocolate road.
I feel like someone did, and they just didn't talk about that.
That'd be cool, too.
I do love this quote by the firefighters. The fire department stated that despite this heartbreaking incident, it is unlikely that a chocolate-free Christmas is imminent in Wuhl. I think that this was just an awkward situation for the fire department in Germany to be caught in. Imagine getting a call. You're like 7 days into your work week of working as a firefighter, and you hear you got to go clean up some chocolate off the road. I think that this is just a funny overall story, and I think it's getting everyone in the festive mood for Christmas time.
Yeah, I'm glad the citizens of Wuhl will still have Christmas on. Chocolate on Christmas, not Christmas on chocolate. Chocolate at Christmas.
I think this is another issue of global warming, that now we're starting to see chocolate-related weather incidents.
Y'all remember that story, Cloud with a Chance of Meatballs?
Yes.
That's where we're headed with global warming.
Of course.
Okay, and our next totally important story is that, from the Huffington Post, Toledo goes crazy for roadside weed decorated for Christmas. So, in the city of Toledo, Ohio, there is a very large weed growing out of the sidewalk, and a lot of passersby have been decorating it for Christmas with Santa hats and presents and tinsel, and you can really see how everyone's getting into the festive spirit, even for this little weed. It's like Charlie Brown, where he has that little Christmas tree, but it's a weed, and it's in the sidewalk. That's so cute.
Yeah, I think this is another good, wholesome story that comes out around Christmas time of just, in a world of so much conflict and divide, I'm glad a community could come together and help out this one poor weed to get its Christmas spirit.
Of course. This weed once stood 4 feet high. That's insane. I am 4'4". I would really love to see a weed that is at my nose. That'd be a lot of fun. But also the donations that are placed around the weed will be donated to local charities in the city, which is just a great way to begin the Christmas holiday.
Yes, I think so as well, and I'm glad again that in a time of so much divide, one community can come together to build up a small little weed.
This weed is a good weed.
On to our next breaking news story. In Montana, again, of course it's in Montana, a guy shoots at another man under the impression that he is Bigfoot. The man is not injured and he did not die, and they are still looking for the shooter right now. So what do you think of this, Hannah?
How do you think that somebody else is Bigfoot? That's my big question. Like, he couldn't have been that tall or that, like, hairy for someone to actually think that he's Bigfoot. Just imagine being mistaken for Bigfoot. That's just wild.
I wonder if the dude was hairy. Like, they didn't release any pictures of him, but I wonder if he was just, like, a really hairy dude.
That'd be amazing. Bigfoot.
And then in another report by a woman, she said she was also shot at, but, I don't know, this could just be someone causing more trouble after hearing this story. But it's still interesting that somebody was under the impression that Bigfoot was walking around their property and just was like, alright, pulled out their gun and went, pow.
Yeah, and before this guy ran away, he told the victim, I thought you were Bigfoot. I don't target practice, but if I see something that looks like Bigfoot, I just shoot at it. Which is not a good, way to live. If you think something looks like Bigfoot, take a picture of it. Don't try to kill it.
I don't know. Maybe it's dangerous. We don't know what Bigfoot's like.
No, Bigfoot needs to be protected. I'm very serious about this. Bigfoot, if Bigfoot is real, you can't kill it. It's a national monument.
Time to see if our hosts have been paying attention to the news. It's time for our current events quiz. I'll ask a question. The host will have 20 seconds to come up with an answer, and then we'll see who's right. Everybody ready? Let's go. Hello, everybody. It is I, the producer, Rod, again back here for your episodal quiz. Now, normally we do a current events quiz, but even though the theme hasn't changed because I didn't want to redo it, that's me, the greatest producer in the world. Even though the theme hasn't changed, the title has. We are not doing a current events quiz today. Today we are doing, today we are doing a holiday geopolitical quiz. And so, while that title sounds very interesting, the actual questions aren't going to be pretty fun today. So, I'm looking forward to it. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready to crush it and win for the second week in a row.
All right. And just a reminder, as usual, we are going to cut out the 20-second, we are going to cut out the 20 seconds of thinking time in post-production, so you, the wonderful audience, we'll not have to wait 20 seconds listening to literally nothing. So, here we go. First question. Which nation constructs a giant straw goat every Christmas? Again, which nation constructs a giant straw goat every Christmas? You have 20 seconds. All right, your time is up. So, Riley, let's hear from you first. Go.
I'm gonna go with Finland.
All right, and Hannah, what's your answer?
I'm going to go with Sweden.
All right. In fact, Hannah surprisingly got this one correct.
Sweden was my other answer.
I love how both of you picked Nordic countries. You're like, yes, it definitely has to be somewhere up there. But Sweden, every year, a small town actually constructs a straw goat. Since 1996, the Swedish town of Gävle has been celebrating the Christmas season by building a giant straw figure of a goat. While the animal may seem an odd choice, smaller straw goats are popular across the country. According to local folklore, the Yule goats not only help deliver presents, but was often Santa's ride of choice. So there you go, from Sweden. Alright, our second question today. Which country celebrates Christmas at KFC? Alright, your 20 seconds starts now. Alright, time is up. Hannah, we will hear from you first. Which country celebrates Christmas at KFC? Go.
I can't imagine any other country than the United States having a KFC in it, so I'm going to say America, even though I know it's wrong.
All right, and Riley, what's your answer?
Japan.
All right, Japan is correct. Japan, even though Christmas is not a national holiday in Japan, that doesn't stop residents from celebrating the day with a special meal from an unexpected place, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Their tradition can be traced all the way back to the fast food company's wildly successful 1974 marketing campaign. I'm probably going to butcher this, so forgive me. Excuse me. All right, let's try this again. Kurisumasu niwan Kentucky. Or, translated to English, Kentucky for Christmas. So, there you have it. Marketing created a Christmas tradition in Japan.
There are so many better chicken restaurants than KFC.
I know, right?
Please rethink your choices.
Do you think Japan has those, though?
I mean, if they have a KFC, they should just invest in some better brands.
It's like the difference, but I'm probably going to offend some listeners here. It's the difference between Taco Bell and Del Taco.
Ooh.
You can say that because you're from California, but it's you can't compare Taco Bell and Del Taco. Oh my god.
I've been to Cali enough.
Taco Bell is not good in comparison to Del Taco, in my opinion.
Yeah, I've been to California, and Del Taco is way superior.
I'll stick to my homemade Texas breakfast tacos, but
those are better than both.
Yes. Honestly, again, I'm not saying that either of those are better than real Mexican food, but if I had to pick one over the other, I would choose Del Taco. So, moving on to our next question, our final question, which will be the tiebreaker for the first time, I think, in the entire history that we've had this segment, which has only been, to be fair, like a month or so. Which nation celebrates Christmas on the 7th of December? Again, which nation celebrates Christmas on the 7th of December? Your 20 seconds starts now. All right, your time is up. Riley, we will hear your answer first. Which nation celebrates Christmas on the 7th of December?
I'm going to go with Australia because they're just weird overall and do things differently.
All right, and Hannah, your answer?
I was going to say somewhere in the Southern Hemisphere, but more specifically Australia as well, just because I think it's the Southern Hemisphere. It's summer over there. They might as well just push it forward.
Well, actually, the answer is Russia. So it looks like for the first time in this segment's history, again, pretty short to be fair, we have a unbreakable tie. And I don't have a backup question prepared, so it'll just stay that way. During the Soviet Union era, Christmas was banned in Russia. Following the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, people were free to celebrate Christmas again, but it's still a quieter and smaller holiday in Russia after the big New Year celebrations. The New Year is the big time in Russia for spending lots of money and eating and drinking lots. Christmas is much more religious and private. Christmas in Russia is normally celebrated on January 7th. The date is different because the Russian Orthodox Church uses the old Julian calendar for religious celebration days. And there you have it.
That's interesting.
Three very interesting random Christmas facts about three very interesting countries. So, I'll be back again for the second discussion this episode. We'll actually have two for this special Christmas episode. And for now, we are going into our next segment. So, take it away, guys. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm just saying I totally should have won that quiz, but let's move on to our first discussion of the day, which is the commercialization of Christmas. So this is probably going to go a couple different ways. So I'm going to let Riley start off on what he thinks about how Christmas, as we become older, becomes more about gifts and buying the right gift rather than enjoying like the spirit of Christmas.
So there's two different ways I look at this. One, from a political way, this is great for capitalism and it encourages great business, especially at this time of year. But from a personal level, I'm going to have to agree that the older you get, the more kind of stressful it gets for a lot of people. Personally, what I do is I don't tell anyone I'm getting them gifts, so a lot of people aren't expecting a gift from me, so they don't give me a gift back, and I'm fine with that, and it feels more like a giving spirit. But when it comes into like a gift competition that we've started to see as we've gotten older, and I think I will continue to see as I grow even older, it gets stressful to try and top that person that gifted you a gift without saying you topped them.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, from a political economic standpoint, especially the day after Christmas when all those sales are going on, everybody is dashing to the stores to make returns or to get things that are on sale for next Christmas, and that's super stressful. It's like Black Friday Part 2. The idea of, like, we have to push and we have to get all of these deals is so stressful, and there are always so many people at the store. Like, if you think about Dillard's, like, I go to Dillard's every, like, January 26th, and, like, that's almost the only day that we go, and it's just packed wall to wall with people trying to get the best deal, and that's so stressful. It's the day after Christmas. You should be, like, asleep and, like, enjoying the things that you've gotten from Santa Claus and from your family, and I think that the push for the best post-Christmas deal is really sad, because we should be enjoying our family. But also, from a personal point of view, I completely agree with you, Riley. As we get older, it is more difficult to enjoy the presents that we get, because we know how stressful it is to give presents to other people, which is why, for all of my friends, I get them the same thing every year. It's like fuzzy socks and a face mask, and that's it. And it's just tradition. I get called a grandma because of it, because I give everyone socks, but I love it. And I think that having that kind of traditional gift, like you and your friends always get each other the same thing no matter what, really helps mitigate that kind of stress pre-Christmas.
Also, guys out there, instant way into a woman's heart around Christmas time is fuzzy socks and food, all right? Just get them both that, and they'll love you forever.
Yeah, I can see that. What do you think about getting gifts for your teachers?
Personally, I kind of stay away from it because it feels like it's a favoritism competition where, like, you're giving them a gift to try and make them like you more, kind of. Even though that's not where your intentions are, a lot of teachers get a lot of gifts from mostly the, like, preppy students, and so it kind of feels that way when a teacher gets a gift. So I kind of stay away from that, but around Christmas time, what I'll do is before we go on break, I'll verbally thank them, and I'll shake their hand and say thanks for a wonderful first half of the year.
That's sweet. I always get my teachers a little something before Christmas, just because I feel like bad in a way, because they deal with so much and so much stress, like for students and for grading and for all of that. So it's usually like $5 at Starbucks, like $5 at Barnes & Noble, Zip Bam Boom, get yourself a drink, get yourself a book, and enjoy your holiday. But I feel like I agree with you that a lot of it is favoritism. I grew up very much as the child of a teacher and a teacher's pet, so I always want my teacher to like me, and I feel like that is definitely a way that I try to get that, is through like, oh, I got you a little gift, or oh, I like made you this little snack. And I can definitely see how my motivations have become more towards that as I've gotten older, more trying to get on a teacher's good side rather than doing something out of the kindness of my heart. And that's kind of sad, because I do love my teachers, most of them. Teachers, if you're listening to this, I love you personally if you're listening to this. I'm sure you're not, but yeah, I love my teachers, and I want to do nice things for them, but also I feel like I am expecting that, those good favors in their heart, that they know, like, oh, look at Hannah, she brought me a little Christmas gift, I'm gonna be a little bit more lenient on my grading, which is something I totally don't expect, but I've, like, come to think about as I do it.
Yeah, I also love the tradition of gifting candy canes to the people you kind of like, but don't want to spend money on, like... Mm. It's super easy, it's super convenient, write them a note, give them a candy cane, shows you care, but it also shows we're not, like, hanging out all the time or constantly texting, but I still kind of care about you, so here's a candy cane.
Yeah, that's super valid. I always, like, end up with, like, this, like, weird mix of, like, candy from other students. I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with this. Like, I didn't get you anything. And that's so awkward when, like, someone gives you a gift and you don't have anything back for them. You're just like, oh, thanks. Anyway, because it's like, I didn't know we were this close. And also, side note, candy canes that are peppermint flavored, gross.
All right. And
I'll take.
To round off this discussion, again, it's great for capitalism, but the older you get, the more stressful it gets once you have to start giving gifts.
Well, if you dear listeners are still looking for a Christmas gift for that special someone, how about some coffee?
Attention all coffee lovers. If you love coffee, hate crony capitalism, and love small businesses, then Ancora Coffee is for you.
That's right, Rarely. Anarcho Coffee sells sustainably and ethically grown craft coffee at affordable prices, as well as some swag for lovers of the brand.
Anarcho Coffee is the premier coffee for those who support true capitalism and not cronyism. And you can get 10% off your first order with code ANCAP2018. That's ANCAP2018.
You can find them at anarchocoffee.com. That's ANARCHOCOFFEE.com. They accept all major cryptocurrencies in addition to dollars. Anarcho Coffee, self-governed caffeine.
It's time for the bipartisanship update. Presented by the Bipartisan Podcast.
Welcome back to our bipartisan update. And today what has begun being discussed is that a new criminal justice bill is becoming closer and closer to being passed. It is being endorsed by both parties and serves to end up overhauling federal prisons and reduce more people from going back in after they have committed a crime. This is going to end up helping fix our entirely screwed up federal prison system. And Donald Trump is endorsing this, as well as many different Democrats. This is a really good middle issue that both parties agree on.
Yeah, I'm super glad we can kind of reform our prison system in a bipartisan way. It's one of the most important parts of, I think, of our government, having people who have committed a crime but are able to be reinstated back into society and kind of come full circle, realizing that they've done wrong and being able to come back into society and be a productive member. So this bill is called the First Step Act, which I think is a pretty great name because it's our first step into really reforming our prison system and having people be able to have that first step back into society. This bill sounds really amazing. It's going to provide more access to rehabilitation and training programs that are aimed at helping prepare prisoners for life after their release, and among other things, such as it makes it against the law to use restraints on pregnant inmates unless they are an immediate threat to themselves or others or flight risk, which is really great. I think that we need to do a lot more for pregnant mothers who are in prison. It also requires that prisoners be incarcerated no more than 500 miles from their primary residence, which is really great because you'll be able to have families come and visit their loved ones, especially during this time of Christmas and other holidays. I think it's great that you have that accessibility to your loved ones who are in prison.
Yeah, and especially in a time where we have so much divide, something that both parties can come together, agree that that this is an issue, and agree on a solution to the issue is extremely refreshing, considering what we've talked about previously in the show about immigration, where both sides are clearly divided. It's good that there is some issue that both sides of the political spectrum can come together and be bipartisan on and agree and make it all better for the community and for the country as a whole.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's great that we're taking this, like, first step, into making more bipartisan efforts to make our country a better place. If I can disagree with one thing in the bill, however, the bill ends automatic life sentences under the three-strike penalty for drug felonies. It makes it instead a mandatory 25-year prison sentence. However, it is not retroactive, so people who have been incarcerated under that three-strike rule, who have been caught with drugs three times, will still have to serve their life sentence, which I think is a bit silly. If you're going to make it the punishment less harmful now, I think you should go back and fix it for people who are serving that life sentence, who were sentenced in the past. I think that would be a much nicer step that we could take in order to make sure our justice system is the fairest it can be.
Yeah, it makes sense, but I also see how, like, these citizens that committed this drug use. They knew the consequences of their action at the time, and the consequences have changed, but they committed these crimes at a time when they knew that the consequences were different. So it does feel kind of fair to me that they'd still have to serve the consequence for the crime they knew that had that consequence for.
Yeah, I can see that, but I really am glad, like I said, like we said, that this is a bipartisan bill, and it's taking that step into making sure that our country can run as best it can under, like, a bipartisanship rule with, like, as we move into January, that there will be a Democratic House and a Republican Senate and White House, and I think that the closer we turn to promoting bipartisanship, the better next year will be for our government.
Definitely, and with that bipartisan update out of the way, let's get into our second discussion for this week.
Hello everyone, it's me, Rod, again. I'm back. How you doing? Alright, so let's get right into our next discussion for today. Something I look forward to hearing you two discuss. I hope you guys are excited for it as I am. Who's running in 2020? Because we all know, 2019 right around the corner, and seeing as this episode is our last of this year, I think this would be a good thing to talk about. So, again, as everyone knows, in 2019, people from both parties that are looking to run for president are going to start campaigning. So, time to speculate and have some fun using both educated guesses and hopes. So, first question to both of you. Who do you want to run for president? You get top three picks. Riley, you go first.
Okay, so personally, I'm going to go with Rubio. I really liked his policies back in 2016. And he's the number one candidate I want to win. I think Trump's going to go up for re-election, obviously. And I also think Cruz is going to come in and try and run for president in 2020. I can't speak. In 2020.
Right. And Hannah, so who are your top three picks that you want to run?
My top three that I want to run would be Julian Castro, former mayor of San Antonio, and former Obama HUD secretary, Beto O'Rourke, representative from El Paso, who ran against Ted Cruz for the Texas Senate seat. And for a third, I'm going to say Kamala Harris. I think that she would be a really great addition to the primary, just because she is more to the left than many Democrats, and I think she would push the party the way I want it to go, which is more towards the left and have a lot of great things to bring to the conversation.
All right, my next question, who do you think / know is going to run from each party? So both each of you will have three people you know / think are going to run from each party. So Hannah, you will list three people that are Republicans you think will run and three Democrats. Go.
Okay, so let's start with Republicans. I think Ted Cruz is going to run. I think Marco Rubio will run. And I think, well, Donald Trump's going to run for re-election, so we'll kind of cast him aside. But I think, oh goodness, who do I think is going to run other than them? I don't keep up with the Republican Party and their politics. I think Paul Manafort might try to run for president since he's leaving the speakership. I think that would be a pretty bold move on his part. But for Democrats, I think they're going to be like no fewer than 20 Democrats running for president. They're going to be a plethora of Democrats to choose from in the primary. So who do I think is going to run? Elizabeth Warren will try to run. Cory Booker will try to run. And I think Bernie Sanders will try to run again.
All right. And and Riley, who are your three people from each party that you know / think are going to run?
I agree with Hannah. We should kind of cast Trump aside. I think Cruz and Rubio for sure. I definitely think that we are going to see a lot of different Republican senators run. But I do think that someone for sure that's going to run, I don't like him very much, but I know for a fact he's going to run, is Kanye West. And then on the Democrat side, I think we are going to get Sanders. I think Beto's going to run. I think we have a possibility of seeing Hillary run again. But other than that, I don't really keep up with Democrat members either, like Hannah doesn't with Republicans, so my knowledge is kind of very centralized.
Right. All right, and finally, when will each person announce? So you don't have to say everyone you listed, but when will some of the people that both of you listed announce they're running? And when do you think they're going to drop out? Riley, you can take this one first.
I think actually the most likely scenario is that on the Republican side, Trump's going to make it all the way again. I think Rubio is going to announce extremely soon because I think he had a lot of support in 2016. I think he's going to gain even more support this time, but I don't think he's going to pull ahead of Trump. And I do think he's going to announce fairly soon. I think Cruz is going to announce a little bit later as we get closer, and I feel like he's going to drop out way earlier than Rubio is. And I also think we're going to see a lot of celebrities feel encouraged to announce in public, and I think most of them are going to drop out pretty early on. Like, I think we're going to see an announcement from Oprah. I think we're going to see an announcement from Kanye. A couple of the celebrities that have been thrown out there, I don't think we're actually going to see an announcement for. Like, The Rock, I don't think we're going to see an actual announcement from him.
All right, and Hannah, who do you think, or when do you think people will announce they're running on the Democrat side, and when are they going to terminate their campaigns?
Okay, so I know Julian Castro is going to make his decision the 12th of January. He put it out when he said he was launching his exploratory committee. They would have that decision really early into the new year, so I think that he'll stick to that, and I think at the very least he'll stay. He will be on the primary list. I think he'll stay up until we primary the Democrats. Beto O'Rourke, I think, will take his time. I think it could be March-ish that he'd announce his campaign, and I think he, too, will stay until the primary. And then Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, those senators, I think, will announce again fairly late into the campaign. And I really can't imagine any Democrat dropping before the primary. I think that they all want their chance at the White House, and I think that they'll stay and have their name be on the list.
All right. Well, thank you guys for that great discussion. It'll be definitely be interesting to see how much of this actually happens because, you know, these are all educated guesses, and it will be interesting to see what happens in the new year. So, with that...
Rod, before we end this discussion... I did have a question for you.
Oh, okay.
What's your dream celebrity you want to run?
Preferably none, I would say.
I agree.
But,
I feel like just for the jokes, they should run. We're not saying they're winning, but
right,
your dream celebrity you want to just announce and come out of nowhere.
I want to see, Kanye West run. And I hope absolutely 100% he loses, and he loses fast. But I would really like to see a campaign come out of that guy because, you know, he's had like some Republican leanings in the past, obviously, but he doesn't seem like an altogether good person for president, obviously. So I think it'd be really interesting to see him run just for the comedy relief. And with that, that ends our second discussion.
I agree.
Now our wonderful hosts, Riley and Hannah, will take it away with our top things of 2018, a year in review. Go ahead, guys.
That was a really great discussion about who we think will be running in 2020, but now let's close out our final episode of the year with the top things of 2018, a year in review. So we're going to start with the most downloaded apps according to Apple. Number 8 is Google Maps, 7 is Netflix, 8 is Bitmoji, 5 is Facebook, 4 is Facebook Messenger, 3 is Snapchat, 2 is Instagram, and 1 is YouTube.
That seems like some backwards logic that Facebook Messenger has more than the actual Facebook platform. Like, I'm kind of confused there.
I'm surprised people are still downloading Facebook.
Oh, wait, these are probably new downloads, so it's probably a lot of people already have Facebook and are getting Facebook Messenger. I don't know, because it seems like that's a backwards order. Bitmoji makes a lot of sense, too, because if Snapchat's number 3, a lot of people download Bitmoji for Snapchat. That makes a lot of sense. Instagram's just a better Snapchat and Facebook. And YouTube makes a lot of sense as the number 1. I'm sad if Hulu doesn't get any representation on here because it's a superior platform to Netflix, but...
That's a bold statement.
It's a true statement.
So next we're going to talk about the top movies of 2018. Number 10 is Venom at $212.97 million. Solo, A Star Wars Story at $213.77 million. Ant-Man and the Wasp at $216.65 million. Mission Impossible Fallout at $220.16 million. The Grinch at $243.54 million. Deadpool 2 at $318.49 million. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom at $416.77 million. Incredibles 2 at $608.58 million. Avengers Infinity War with $678.82 million. And finally, at number 1, Black Panther at $700.06 million.
Dang, Disney's Marvel especially has a lot of money because they had Black Panther, Infinity War, and Ant-Man and the Wasp. And including Sony's Marvel, there's Deadpool 2 and Venom as well. Like, Marvel made up half of this list.
That's amazing. I think Marvel is definitely moving into a place where it's going to be racking up these numbers really quickly.
I feel like Marvel's going to collapse soon, like the whole superhero genre. Like, it's going to be like the Western, where it's like, this was popular for a good period of time, and then it's like, something else is going to come along.
Oh, that's sad. I can't imagine what would be next after all of this.
A lot of biopics and, like, musician-based movies are getting big and coming out.
Interesting, interesting. Do you want to talk about our top songs of 2018?
I do. As someone who likes old music, I've heard of two of these songs. So our number 10 spot is IDGAF. I'm assuming I'm supposed to say those one letter at a time. By Dua Lipa. At number 9 is Feel It Still by Portugal the Man. At 8, we have Paradise by George Ezra. At 7, we have Nice for What by Drake. At 6, we have Perfect by Ed Sheeran. At 5, we have This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. At number 4, we have These Days by Malcolmore / Rudimental / Glenn. At number 3, we have Shotgun by George Ezra. At number 2, we have One Kiss by Calvin Harris and Dua Lipa. And at number 1, we have God's Plan by Drake.
Drake kind of ran this. Drake and Dua Lipa both had really good years.
Yeah, I think Ezra was... Yeah, Ezra's on here twice as well.
We have no diversity in music anymore.
I mean, I feel like these are all people of different heritages, but now they're dominating, so it kind of reducts the problem.
Yeah, I mean, everyone kind of... Like, 3 people have run the gauntlet this year. I hope that we have... this is kind of, like, silly, but I hope in, like, 2019 we have more room for new artists to grow.
I feel like Ed Sheeran really blew up this year. He wasn't that big last year. I feel like a lot more people know who he is after this year. Mm-hmm. But I know Drake has been huge for years. I think Ezra's been huge for years. I don't know who Dua Lipa is, but I'm assuming they've probably been big for a while.
Dua Lipa, I think, is fairly new, at least the past 2 years.
All right. That's interesting. Again, I'm an old music buff, so I've only heard 2 of these songs.
Yeah, I like to pretend that I'm cool and hipster and, like, only listen to, like, the indie genre, but I can recognize a large portion of these. A lot of them are good summer songs. They've kind of stuck around past the summer vacation.
I feel like I've probably heard them on the radio, but I couldn't give you them by name.
Yeah.
All right, we also have our top news stories of 2018. At number 10, we have the royal wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Makes sense. Number 9, Bitcoin. What's up, BitConnect? That experienced a fall from grace. We have at number 8, this year, Iraqi voters held their first election since driving out the Islamic State. Number 7, the Castro family's more than 50-year reign over Cuba came to an end with the election of Miguel Díaz-Canel. At number 6, Puerto Rico was left without electricity for almost a full year at 11 months, and the world came together to help it. At 5, we have the Kavanaugh hearings. Number 4 is net neutrality debate. We had at number 3, Kim Jong-un's announcement that North Korea will denuclearize, which is now thought of as a lie. At number 2, we have Facebook Cambridge Atlantica scandal that revealed more than 50 million people's personal information. And at number 1, we have 12 boys and their soccer coach got stranded in a cave in Thailand and the world railed to their rescue.
I'm really glad that most of these are, like, nice stories. Like, sure, we have things that weren't super cool and, like, were really, like, hard when they were happening, but a lot of these are, like, people coming together and, like, making our world a better place.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of these make sense. Like, a lot of these blew up. I feel like a lot of people that don't keep up with politics heard about a lot of this. I think Bitcoin got really big because of all the memes that came out of Bitcoin. I know the Royal Wedding was huge in pop culture. When it came to Iraq, that's a huge step against terrorism. The Castro family, again, a huge thing that happened. The Kavanaugh hearings, everyone was talking about that, especially in America, where it seemed like it divided us a lot. Kim Jong-un about North Korea's denuclearization, again, huge story.
Yeah, so I think this is a great way to round out our year, kind of having, like, taking a step back and realizing, like, how much has happened this year and how different our world is than it was this time last year.
Mm-hmm. Thank you guys all for listening once again. You guys are able to find us on Anchor, Stitcher, and most other platforms. You can listen to us on the free Anchor app, where you can send us voicemails that we are able to respond to and listen to your comments and respond to them on the podcast. You can check our website, sites.google.com/view/bppodcast.com. Right now, we are working on a real domain soon, but it will not be till some point next year. Do keep in mind that our next episode of the show is not going to be till the second week of January due to some scheduling issues and the holidays coming up. We are sorry for the postponing, but it's going to have to be a little bit later than normal. You're able to contact us on Twitter at BipartisanPodC1. That's BipartisanPodC1. You can also email us at BipartisanPodcast@gmail.com. You can call us by phone at 619-201-0964, where you can leave a voicemail as well. Consider supporting us on Patreon for different perks at patreon.com/bipartisanpodcast. If you guys are interested in sponsoring us, please call or email us today. And coming into the next year, you guys should be on the lookout for some new changes, as well as a special guest host for this next episode. And within the next couple of months, we will be partnering with another organization. Before we end off the show, I want to give a special thanks to Rod, the producer. We could not do this without him, and we want to wish him a Merry Christmas as well as all of you, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays, y'all.
Come back next year, in the second week of January, for your independent source for news, fun, and reform. I've been Riley Lauterbach.
I've been Hannah Elwood.
And thank you guys for listening.